Good evening, everybody. It is Wednesday, September 22nd. This is a regular meeting of the Programs and Services Committee. We are being audio and video recorded, so take note of that at the start of the meeting. Let's see, we are joined by, I am Josh Princeman, Councillor at Large from Ward 4. I chair the committee. With us, I see President Albright from Ward 2. From Ward 6, Vice Chair, Councillor Brenda Noel. From Ward 3, Councillor Pam Wright. From Ward 5, Councillor Bill Humphrey. I believe that at least a couple of our colleagues are not going to make it tonight, or may join later. So if we are joined by anyone else, I will try to take note of that. I also see the Chief Operating Officer of the city, Jonathan Yeo, Parks, Recreation and Culture Commissioner Nicole Banks. Hello, Commissioner Banks. Ms. Stapleton, Ms. Fairley, Ms. Kritzer, how are you? As well as Luis Perez de Marisby, who I always mispronounce, but I always try hard. Welcome. So let's go ahead and get started. The first item on our agenda is item 310-21. This is the appointment of Nancy Kritzman to the Commission on Disability. For those of you who are wondering, it is Kritzman. There is no N in the middle there. Some of us have two N's in our name. Others of us have one N. We are not related. I am able to act on this appointment. Ms. Kritzman, what we usually do is offer you an opportunity to tell us why you are interested in serving on the Commission on Disability. Then we'll open it up to fellow councillors, committee members, to see if they have any questions. And then we will vote on a recommendation whether to send your appointment on to the full council. So with that said, why don't I turn it over to you and let you tell us why you are interested in serving on the Commission on Disability.
So I am interested in serving on the Commission of Disability. I am a 43-year user of a wheelchair. When my son was 8 months old, I started to use the wheelchair. I suffered from Guillain-Barré syndrome at that time. I was totally paralyzed in the hospital for 12 months and then went to a rehab. Later on, I had a recurring episode when my daughter was born. So I'm very familiar with all the obstacles that people, challenges that people have, whether they're handicapped physically, any challenges that seniors have, et cetera. So, and advocacy is something that I'm passionate about. Going through the medical world over a 43-year period, I understand all the obstacles that have gone on. I love to advocate. I have a voice. I'm a listener, a thinker, a doer, and I want to be there for somebody that is not able to necessarily speak for themselves and navigate through these complex situations and to find some resolution. I also want to be out into the communities, into the village centers, and hear what people have to say, and be out in the restaurants and the businesses and all the other places that matter. I also serve on the Patient Family Advocacy Council at Mass General Brigham at Newton Wellesley Hospital. I've been a member on that council for 4 years.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
You're
appreciate
welcome.
That. Let me now see if there are any councillors on the committee who would like to ask a question. I see President Albright's hand up. President Albright? I think you're on mute, Madam President.
I was on mute. Thank you. Thank you for being willing to serve. But I have a question for you. I recently had to be in Seattle for 2 weeks, and I saw a lot of people tooling around town in wheelchairs. And I was wondering, why don't I see that in Newton? And I'm curious to ask you, is it because the physical environment outside, in, like, for instance, our villages or even our streets, is that difficult to navigate? Or is it because there isn't enough housing that's for people with wheelchairs, and therefore that's why we don't see people tooling around our villages with wheelchairs. Do you have an opinion on that?
So I think it's a combination. Transportation is really difficult in the city of Newton to get, not within Newton, but to get to other areas outside of Newton. Unless you're able to travel the T. That's one issue. The second issue is the sidewalks are very hard to navigate around Newton, and the ramps, it's getting much better. But I think the main problem is Newton has NUMO, and it has a long way to go, but also the ride is horrific. And so to get outside of Newton to go anywhere, and a lot of the housing is set outside the main areas of Newton, so it's hard to get into the village areas where the action is and where the shopping is. And I'm sitting right now on a committee where the village centers are, and one of the things I brought up is maybe, especially during the good weather, if there was a trolley, like one of those Beantown trolleys, and people could get on and off, it would support the businesses, and it would be great during, like, especially during from Thanksgiving to Christmas time, it would be a great way to support local businesses in the city of Newton.
I thank you for that answer, and again, thank you for being willing to serve, and I hope that you'll bring some of your ideas to the Commission on Disability to do something about, as you just suggested.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam President. Let me quickly note that we have been joined by Council Maria Greenberg from Ward 1, who is also a member of the committee. Seeing no other questions, I will move approval of Ms. Kritzman. I will move approval of item 310-21. Any discussion on that motion? All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, I believe that is 6-0. That means that the committee has approved your appointment, Ms. Kritzman, and at the next full council meeting, the full council will vote on the appointment.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Thank you. My pleasure.
The next item is item 311-21. This is the appointment of Cynthia Green to the Human Rights Commission. I apologize. Let me just note that we've been joined by Councillor Alicia Bowman from Ward 6, not a member of the committee, but also a city councillor. And Commissioner Morse, I don't know if I remember if I mentioned you at the beginning, but Commissioner Morse is here with us as well. So sorry, back to item 311-21, Cynthia Green for the Human Rights Commission. Ms. Green, same opportunity for you to tell us why you're interested in serving on the Human Rights Commission, and then I will open the floor up for questions.
Great, thank you. And if I can start by saying thanks to all of you for all you do for our city. We all benefit from it, so thank you. So I've long been interested in issues of human rights. My professional background is in business and international affairs, and I was lucky enough to do a project for Mayor Menino and the Initiative for a Competitive Inner City, which really, for me, solidified my understanding of some of these issues right in our backyard, if you will. I currently sit on the board of Families Organizing for Racial Justice, which hopefully you're all familiar with, as well as on the board of Story Starters, which is a program which supports families in talking with their kids about race and racism using research-based strategies and picture books. And then I also sit on the Family Advisory Council of Cradles to Crayons, which is working to fight clothing insecurity. So I see a lot of different groups within Newton, and you know, I'm sure you all feel the same. We've got a lot of work to do. There's a lot of need still, and I've participated in the HRC for the past 4 years, attending meetings and working with them, and I'm really excited to deepen the impact we make. I know as a cisgender, straight, white, middle-aged woman, my profile is not one that like needs amplifying. So I'm really excited to help look for more voices that we can bring into the conversation and really listen to and support. So Yep, that's it.
Terrific. Thank you very much. I do want to ask if you've ever noticed that Zoom sold your contact information, because that was one I hadn't been on the lookout for, but we can get to that in a moment. Are there any counselors who have questions? I know we're all very used to having candidates with backgrounds from Zambia and Caracas, Venezuela, but Counselor Noel.
Thank you. So I meant to say this to the last candidate as well. I just want to thank you for serving. Both women, you know, bring extensive knowledge, and, you know, the city wouldn't be as dynamic or thoughtful as it is if we didn't have people willing to volunteer. So thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. I don't see any other questions. I agree. I think to both of you, I think your backgrounds are exceptional. I think you're fantastic candidates, both for the positions that you've been appointed for. So I know where I'm misreading now, so I will focus on you for the moment, but absolutely, I'm happy to support this nomination. I think hopefully you'll do a fantastic job, and I thank you for your willingness to serve. So with that, I'm going to move approval. So I will motion to approve on item 311-21. Any discussion on that motion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Again, approved 6-0. And Ms. Green, same for you. At the next full council meeting, this will be before the city council for final approval.
Great.
Thank you. Again, thank you for your willingness to serve. Thank you for your time tonight. And as I mentioned before, if you drop off, we won't be offended, but you're welcome to stay all night. We'd like to have a good time here on this panel. All right. The next item is item 281-21. This is the CPC recommendation to appropriate $1,440,344 in CPA funding. Ms. Kreitzer, are you presenting on this item?
I believe so. I'm also here with Dan Brody, who's the chair of the CPC. Dan, did you want to introduce the project?
Why don't you go ahead and do it? You know a lot more about it than I do.
And I apologize. Are we doing this and the $420,000 item together?
We can do them separately if it's easier to vote on them separately.
Just wanted to make sure.
But for both of those projects, we have Commissioner Banks and we have Luis Perez de Marisi here on behalf of both of those projects.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if there's anyone else here, but we can get to that. If it's okay, I can I share my screen?
Yep, please go ahead.
So our first project is the Livingston Cove Improvements Project Funding Recommendation. Livingston Cove is a half-acre parcel that's located on Crystal Lake, not very far from the bathhouse. It's a well-used property that's used for fishing as well as water access and passive recreation. And it's suffered severely over the last few years with erosion and contaminants that are flowing into Crystal Lake. Crystal Lake suffers from overuse and extreme stress, with erosion from this site adding to the problem. And we have some photos here showing the pathway along the dam, along Crystal Lake, as well as the water access point. The CPA funding request is for funding to construct new accessibility, erosion, and passive recreation improvements that include accessible pathways and ramps, a cantilever deck with safety railings and terrace seating that will allow space for fishing as well as for pedestrians walking through the area, new benches and on-grade deck with terrace seating, slope stabilization plantings, rain gardens, and strategic pruning to improve views, and river stones and reused granite blocks to stabilize and improve the water access points. The funding request is for $1,440,344. The CPC has recommended that the project be divided between open space and recreation funding, with 20% to come from open space, and that would come out of the open space prior year reserve funds, and 80% to come out of recreation, which would come out of the CPC's prior year undesignated funds. As shown here, the CPC or CPA funding, recommended funding, would cover the construction costs, the city's staff time, would cover oversight and management, and they're also receiving grants and state funding for the conceptual design development and permitting, And DPW is also contributing to the project for a total project cost of $1.6 million. At present, I believe the project is already in under permitting review with the Conservation Commission, or will be by the end of the month. As they go through that process, they're also working on the construction documents, and they expect to have the construction documents ready once permitting is complete and the review process is complete, with a plan to begin project bidding and contracting next summer and construction next fall. Thank you.
Sorry, I had to pick myself up here. Thank you. Ms. Kreitzer, does anyone else want to present on that, whether it's from the CPC or the administration, before I open it up to fellow counselors for comments? We're not doing public comments this evening, but I'm happy to open it up to other counselors.
Chair, if I may, Luis Perez de Marisi from Parks and Recreation. I did want to, for the record, clarify, you know, in Laura's presentation, since the project was presented to the CPC, the river stone at the water's access point has been changed for stacked granite blocks based on some public input that we've received. So I just wanted to clarify that for the record. Thank you.
And I think the graphics and descriptions of those were included in our packet, so folks should have seen that. Councillor Noel.
Thank you. I don't want to usurp any of the departments speaking about it, but if I just wanted to speak on behalf of my role as the Ward 6 counselor. So this project has been in the works for the better part of 3 years. It's a very thoughtful project. It's had a public process, which there was which was disrupted a little bit by COVID, but the Parks and Rec Department moved forward with it. The project does two things that are critical to Crystal Lake. One is that it creates accessibility for people with disabilities, which is really important. Right now, it's not accessible to people that have mobility issues. And the second thing it does is it addresses the deterioration of Levingston Cove from use. And it does it in a way that meets the goals of ensuring sustainability, ensuring it's environmentally friendly, and also ensuring accessibility. I will say that, you know, the process has included the Friends of Crystal Lake, as well as the Crystal Lake Conservancy. And recently there has been some controversy about the process and in terms of people feeling like that they've been heard. I do think from where I've sat that the Parks and Rec Commission has remained engaged with the constituency and worked really hard to negotiate aspects that align with the goals of this project. As you can, if you're reading your materials, it's gone through the Community Preservation Act process. It got a very strongly worded letter from the Commission on Disabilities, Ms. Farley, who's here tonight. It's also been supported by several additional counselors, and the timing on this is critical. Because of COVID, the lake has experienced a significant increase in use, which it's a natural resource, it's a public resource. This is what, you know, this is something that we should be open to our community to enjoy. And so in that, we've got this funding opportunity to fortify it and remain and be able to continue to have accessibility for the public. I think it's a win-win. And I do think that, you know, we've worked really hard to secure funding through the CPA, and as well as down the road, there'll be, you know, even our state reps have worked on fortifying Crystal Lake. So I'm supportive of this project. My Ward 6 colleagues are in support of this project. It's been a lot of work. It's very thoughtful. And it's a marked improvement over what's currently happening, and it enables the lake to still be enjoyed. And I'm very appreciative of the work of Parks and Rec and the community process. And it has not been perfect, but the folks who have come to the table have remained engaged, and everybody understands that we all want the same goals. And so in that sense, I'm excited about this. And so I'll be supporting it.
Thank you, Councillor Noel. I see one of your ward colleagues is here to actually speak for herself. Councillor Bowman.
So I did send a letter earlier, so I won't bother to repeat much of that. And, of course, I agree with everything we just heard from Councillor Noel. The one additional item I will add is that a large component of the open space and recreation plan was about improving accessibility to all of our parks and recreation spaces. So I think that this project, and as it has been designed, is a natural, playing that out and meeting those goals of accessibility. And I think that it's critical. This is the only spot on the lake that would be truly wheelchair accessible in a way that would be open to everybody. And I think that it's important that we do it, but I think that it's, hopefully this will be the first of many, many projects that will become make our parks much more accessible. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bowman. Anyone else, any other councillors wishing to comment or make a motion? Anything is in order at this time. Councillor Humphrey.
Yes, sorry, I got a bit distracted. I think something's happening with the Zoom meeting. I don't know if other people are seeing that, but it's pretty hard to follow what's happening here because someone keeps raising and lowering their hand and getting bumped around the screen. I don't know if there's anything that our committee clerk can do on that front. In case members of the public don't know, as I think the chair tried to say earlier, if there's not a public hearing announced, you can't really do a public hearing as part of a meeting. So this isn't a public hearing. Anyway, I appreciated the comments from Councillors Noel and Bowman, and also the letter from Councillor Downs that we received last week. I just wanted to make sure that people had on the council had seen that as well, since it came a little bit earlier. This does seem like a very good project to me. I liked the letter that Jeannie sent to us, noted that a lot, as we've talked about on this committee frequently, that accessibility is not just about people with disabilities. Obviously, that is hugely important, but there's also many other people that will benefit from this project. A lot of senior citizens making transitions into various stages of mobility or not. I agree that there seems to have been an engaged public process, and that the Parks and Rec team and everyone else from the city side has been very responsive to that and has made certain changes to the project based on public feedback. So to that extent, I'm satisfied. I haven't been completely sure that I even understood what some of the critiques being made were, although I've heard plenty of them at various meetings. So at the moment, I think I'm satisfied with where we're going with this project, and I would certainly not want us to miss out on the various funding opportunities that our Ward 6 colleagues have just mentioned that, you know, have been lined up by our state delegation and federal and so forth. So that's where I'm at on this project right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Humphrey. I quickly mentioned that we have been joined by Councillor Kelly, Councillor at Large from Ward 3. And I think Ms. Lawler from the Law Department is here, and I didn't mention her earlier. So Ms. Lawler, good to see you. Next hand I see is Councillor Pam Wright. Councillor Wright?
Thank you, Chair Crinston. I haven't been following this that closely. But I have been getting and seeing other emails from residents that are concerned. And I was wondering, when did the design change? Because there's a lot of concern lately. Has the design changed in the last 6 months, and did people were able to comment after the latest change?
That question.
I didn't know if it was going to be you or Ms. Kreitzer. So go ahead, please.
Sure. So from the Parks and Recreation Commission approval to now, there have been minor changes based on subsurface conditions that we found behind the existing fishing wall, where we encountered some ledge. So we needed to shift the original location of the fishing platform in order to sort of avoid, a higher contingency cost for construction. In the result of that, the platform was reduced slightly because we're working around trees and all that. So the design has been presented before the CPC. The Conservation Commission is looking at it now. So the changes have been public and folks have been apprised of those minor changes. Other than that, the design remains pretty close to what the Parks and Recreation Commission approved.
Let me just jump in for one second. I apologize, Councilor Wright, but we've been joined by Councilor Baker from Ward 7, who is a member of the committee. Councilor Baker, we are talking about item 281-21, the Levingston Cove item.
Thank you very much.
There was a brief presentation, and we're into discussion and council motions. Councilor Wright, I apologize for cutting you off there. Please go ahead.
No, that's okay. I'm done for now.
Okay. Thank you, Councilor Wright. Next, I have President Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like this project. I like the way it takes Crystal Lake, which is a public resource for the community, and it enhances it for all kinds of people. And I would like to move approval.
Okay. Thank you, Madam President. President Albright has moved approval. We now discuss that motion, which is going to seem very much like the same discussion we were just having, I suspect. Councilor Wright, your hand is up again. Is that a renewed interest in discussion? On mute, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just taking it down.
Okay. All right. President Albright has moved approval. Seeing no other comments or discussion. All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? So I believe that is 7-0.
I'm going to abstain.
Okay. Sorry. Abstentions. So 6-0-1. Councilor Wright, that was you, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So 6-0-1. The item is approved. Thank you. The next item we have is item 347-21. This is the CPC recommendation to appropriate $420,000 in CPA funding. This is the item about the recreational fields. Who is going to be presenting this one?
I will be giving a brief presentation on this.
Go ahead, Ms. Kretzer.
Thank you. So our second project tonight is the Athletic Fields Capital Improvement Plan Design for FY 2022 through 2025 recommendation from the CPC. Parks and Recreation has submitted this proposal, which is intending to address the critical need for more athletic fields and better quality and more high-quality athletic fields. Parks and Rec's recent community survey listed playing fields as second in terms of urgency and athletic fields as third in terms of greatest demand. As I understand, number one was parks, and they pointed out that many of the parks also include these amenities. And so this is high on the list of high priorities for Newton residents. The project is proposed in coordination with local team stakeholders and sports organizations and intends to meet the following goals of improving quality and quantity of multipurpose fields, improve the accessibility in Newton's parks, stabilize park construction details for better more efficient management and site maintenance, and invest equitably in Newton's parks and athletic fields. And just to point to the graphic here, there are two proposals that were submitted to the CPC. The first is the three-year capital improvement plan, which proposed to work on four sites: Albemarle Park, the Brown Oak Hill Fields, McGrath Park, and the Burr School Fields. And if additional funding remained at the end when those projects were complete, the five-year plan would include looking at Braceland Park in Upper Falls and Forte Park in Nonantum. So the current funding request is to hire an on-call design consultant to complete all the studies and design work necessary to take the projects from initial design development through construction and project completion. And as I mentioned, this is primarily going to focus on four sites: the Russ Halloran Sports and Recreation Complex at Albemarle Park, McGrath Park, First School Fields, and the Brown Oak Hill Middle School Fields. And then if at the end of the completion of those projects, there's additional CPA funding remaining, they would like to use it at Braceland Park and Forte Park. The funding request is for $420,000. That would be recreation category funding that would come from the undesignated funds in the FY22 CPA budget reserve account. And I've noted here, right now, we have just short of $3 million in that FY22 budget reserve. So if this project is funded, we would still have $2.5 million remaining in that undesignated budget reserves that we could use for other projects in the future. The project funding sources include the CPA recommendation, as well as city staff time, and contributions from the Forte Park Artificial Turf Feasibility, $17,000 from the Athletic League funding, McGrath Park Accessibility Path, which would be coming from the CDBG funding, and Forte Park Lighting Upgrades, which comes from developer mitigation funds, and the Athletic Lighting Structural Assessment for Forte Park, Albemarle, and Newton South Tennis Courts for a total of $987,545. The timeline for this project, the city would like, or Parks and Recreation would like to begin, the city would like to begin contracting with consultants in this fall. Task one would be to complete the multi-site topographical surveys, public input, and conceptual design, which would be this winter through next spring. Task two and three, design development through construction documents in spring 2022 through fall 2022. And construction would be to be determined once those steps are completed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kreitzer. Is that a child there presenting with you?
Yeah, sorry. I had an assistant join me here halfway through.
So. What's your assistant's name?
Do you want to say hi? This is Ellie.
Hi. I'm sorry, what's
the name? Ellie, my assistant here.
Good evening, Ellie. Welcome. Have you used any of these fields that we're talking about?
We've used Braceland, right? Yeah, but she's young. She'll get there.
Okay. Well, I believe our fields are made for people of all ages. I don't think there's an age restriction. If they have a red rope up there at the side, let me know. I can do something about that. Let's see if we have any questions from committee members. Councillor Humphrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have some concern about the Braceland issue, which obviously I've raised this before, you know, and talked about it with everyone, I think, at this point, but I think we're getting to it eventually, but I'm a little concerned with the framing here that this is like, well, we'll get to it if we have leftover funds, which is maybe not what was meant to be conveyed here. So I thought I should clarify that for the benefit of my constituents. And obviously I know you live right there as well, but you know, I just want to get a little bit more insight on the record here for anyone, you know, that might be watching a new TV or anything like that. And I don't know if Nicole wants to weigh in or anybody else wants to weigh in on that specific point. Obviously we have to balance all these different projects. And so I'm not trying to just make it all about Braceland, but I don't want people to feel like they're getting left behind again, because that one's been delayed for well over a decade now.
Hi, thank you, Councillor Humphrey, for that question. And we're very excited to move all of these projects forward. The projects that we've selected are really a culmination of meeting with our sport groups and our Parks and Recreation Commission over the past year. We've really tried to focus on projects that will increase our multi-purpose field space. And we have laid them out in a 3-year and a 5-year plan. However, looking at doing this with the assistance of the CPA funding to have this design and engineer firm working with us will really give us quite a bit of flexibility in how we can put these projects together. So our intent is absolutely going to be to hold public meetings it's going to take a little bit of time to continue to collect that feedback. And, you know, it's just a very important part of us getting started with this. And, you know, once we have that together, we'll be able to work through. We don't know how far the money will stretch, but the intent is to work through having design and engineering put together so that we can have a discussion about what makes sense to move forward first. And that could come down to what the designs look like, what they provide for field space. It could come down to what the costs are, in which order we decide to bring them forward. And we're also going to be very cognizant of putting them together in an order where we can have, you know, not every field under construction and at the same time, so that we would have some new field space developed early on in the project phases that we can then move our sport groups onto those as we go under construction with other fields. So I think, you know, Graceland being on the list here, I don't want, you know, to really say that it's being saved for year five or it's going to be done year six at this point, because we really need to collect all of this information to be able to make some decisions about the best order and which projects to move forward.
You all set, Councilor Humphrey?
Yep, thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that, Commissioner Banks. I see Chair of the CPC, Mr. Dan Brody is here. Did you want to comment as well, sir?
I just wanted to clarify one thing. As Commissioner Banks said, this proposal is for design funding, so to figure out what needs to be done in each of these fields and develop construction documents. The Parks and Recreation will be coming back to the CPC for construction funding, and if in the document that's in the committee agenda, there's an estimate of construction costs for each of these projects, and we're talking about $5 million for the first four, something in that sort of ballpark. So you should just be aware that that's coming along at some point.
Thank you. Can't come soon enough as far as I'm concerned. Councillor Wright.
Thank you, Chair Crinchman. I have a few questions. So according to the schedule, nothing is actually going to physically be done for over a year from now. But some of these projects are pretty, I would say, easier than the other ones, like removing two infields. But it's on the same schedule as rebuilding Albemarle. Couldn't some of these projects be done earlier instead of later?
I can address that question. Yes. Luis Perez de Marisi, Parks and Recreation, Parks, Recreation and Culture. Yes, some are more straightforward than others, for sure. However, you know, once we hire the consultant, we're really going to take a look at all of these and really refine the schedule. This was really a draft schedule that we sort of put together, assuming the worst for some of these and hoping for the best. If that makes sense. So to answer your question, there are some that are going to take less time than others, for sure.
Okay. And then, synthetic turf. There's only, I believe, three in the city, which the high schools have every day except for Sundays. Is there going to be a strategy about synthetic turf in as part of this, or when will that strategy be formed and complete?
Mr. Chair, I can answer that.
Go ahead, Mr. Young.
Thank you. Councillor Wright, yes, so as part of the capital improvement plan in October, we'll be discussing more about the synthetic turf fields. There are three right now in the city, and at least two of them are in need of repair sooner rather than later. Or replacement. So we will be starting that process sometime. We'll discuss it more in the CIP process. It's not part of this specific project, which is focused on the grass turf fields and getting those improved, quickly.
Will there be, a review or discussion about, changing some of the grass fields to synthetic turf? So it sounds like none of these will be, but are there other fields that may go that way?
Commissioner Banks has talked about this and may have looked into it.
Park, yeah.
Yes. Councillor Wright, as far as options for additional turf fields in the future, in this plan, we have laid out that there are two potential sites that could be considered. That would be at Forte and at Albemarle. And again, we would put together the designs in a way that that could be done in the future or as part of the project, depending on, you know, fundraising efforts, funding in the CIP for the replacement carpets at both of the high schools. We can have that discussion, but we will absolutely, you know, have them designed in a way that those options will be there.
So that would be something much later down the line, not part of this project or scope?
So I think the scope would include ensuring that in the future, the fields that we identify as potential for artificial turf would be designed in a way that they could be installed. We will also, as part of what Jonathan was speaking to, as the capital plans get firmed up, be looking at the high school replacements and be starting the discussion about, you know, the replacement carpet, but more in detail about the infill material. And some of that information can be used to also share for these other sites as well. So, you know, again, it's design and engineering, and we will include those concepts into that package. But we would want to have the you know, to take the time to have public input and future decisions about what sites and what type of materials to use for an installation.
Okay, and I have one more question, and this is more of a general question. So has there been an analysis done that, since we are doing some modifications to these fields, do we have the right fields, the type of fields, you know, do we need more soccer fields instead of, you know, baseball fields or whatever? And, you know, the number of players and what's being used, has that been done or will it be done in the future?
So we do have our own in-house data that shows that we have a shortage of field space. And in particular, we have a shortage of multi-purpose field space. So our rectangular fields, and those serve sports such as soccer, lacrosse, field hockey, ultimate frisbee. I'm sure there's a few more out there. Hope I'm not forgetting anybody who's watching the meeting tonight. But that's our data shows that we do have a shortage of fields, and in particular that type of field.
Is there any plans on trying to reduce that shortage? And how bad of a shortage? Are we down 20%, 50%?
So I don't know an actual percentage. We know that we were short on being able to complete our field schedules to meet the needs of our school athletic departments and our youth sport groups. Previously, we have had a change in our school schedule, which has caused additional time management needs, and starting later in the afternoon, you know, putting a little bit more pressure on those fields because we basically have about an hour and a half of time after school that's not usable field time anymore. So that's going to significantly impact what was kind of already a difficult and challenging situation. You know, we always manage to put the field schedules together. And the kids have gotten out there and played, but in general, youth sports has increased the amount of sports, the number of kids participating, and the, you know, number of practices and games that each of those sport groups are doing has also increased pretty significantly over the past, you know, 5 or more years. Yeah, I don't have an exact percentage. But it's, you know, well documented in our field scheduling data.
Oh, I love data. Could I get a copy of that, or you can show me a link of it?
We can.
I love data and spreadsheets.
Sure.
Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Right, loves data and spreadsheets. She actually has a spreadsheet of all the data that she's collected just by title. Commissioner Banks, I just wanted to ask you quickly if I could. I think Weeks Field is a sort of critical field in terms of soccer programs. I think it houses a lot of our soccer work. Is there any, and I know the work on Weeks that's going to need to happen eventually, is going to displace, as I said, because a lot of, there's heavy usage. Is there any thought to trying to include at least the design slash analysis of Weeks sooner rather than later? I know it's not included in this this item, but yeah. It feels like it would be very worthwhile to try and include that analysis sooner rather than later.
So the other piece that our department is putting quite a bit of work into is our maintenance of the existing fields that we have, and we've been working very closely with youth soccer in making some improvements there. That particular field was on our schedule this current year for our IPM program, so those improvements were made, and in general, that would be considered one of our premier fields that is utilized by the sport groups that will be focusing our maintenance, budget and work on that field. So we're definitely tackling that field in terms of, it being a high level use field and a premier field specifically for soccer at this point. But it's not on the list for redesign right now. And Luis, I don't know if this is mentioned anywhere for redesign, if it's in the open space and recreation plan or anything like that.
Yeah. So Weeks Field I do want to take a quick step back. Over the past year, we've been working with the athletic field subcommittee from the Parks and Recreation Commission, and we have gathered a ton of input from all the user groups, and the ones that we're bringing forward were the ones that got the most attention from those stakeholders, and Weeks Field wasn't really, making that mark. And it did not come up all that much in the open space and recreation plan.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'm not seeing any other comments. Did someone want to make a motion on 347-21? President Albright is mutedly moving approval. I could read your lips. President Albright has moved approval.
Yes.
Yep. Knew it. Any discussion on that motion? All right. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Aye. Any abstentions? All right, I believe that is 7-0 on 347-21. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Banks. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Luis.
Welcome.
Thank you. Next item is 267-21. This is a request for a discussion on rodent control in Newton. And I think we'll take these next two items together. The other one is 341-21. This is a request for additional rodent control initiatives. So I know Councillor Greenberg, I don't know if you want to introduce this. I don't know. I think, is it Commissioner Morse? Are you the one who's going to talk to us about?
I'll be starting.
Mr. Yeo, okay. Councillor Greenberg, was there anything you wanted to say first before I turn it over to Mr. Yeo?
Yeah, I just have a short statement.
Sure.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. Rodent infestation has been a growing concern for our residents. I understand that the causes for the increase of infestation is multifaceted, but in addition to the thoughtful and effective measures to be taken by the administration, I thought a good place for the city council to start to address this problem would be to make it a requirement for demolition and excavation projects to implement pest mitigation plans in order to acquire a building permit. This would be for all by right, special permit, and city projects that involve demolition and excavation. Many of our neighboring cities and towns have this requirement, and I'm suggesting that we look at the details of what the requirements are and eventually create an ordinance that is best fit for Newton, with the ultimate goal of preventing off-site rat migration and help the elimination of rat activity in our neighborhoods. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Greenberg. Councilor Wright, I see your hand is up. Did you want to say something before we go to Mr. Yeo as well?
Yes, I think Mr. Yeo was going to text or email a few other councilors that wanted to be in this part of the meeting before we started.
Our committee clerk already emailed everyone.
Nathan, did you?
I just sent an email to the other co-doctors on this item, but they may or may not be still wrapped up in other meetings at the moment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. And Nathan, maybe you can let the folks who are on the next item know that their item is up next, even though it'll be a few minutes. Mr. Yeo, why don't you go ahead, and hopefully the people who are interested can join us as you get going.
Thank you. Good evening. If I could share a screen,
sure.
That would be great. All right. Can you see my presentation?
Yes, we can.
All right, wonderful. I just want to start off by thanking Councillor Greenberg for her leadership on this issue. We've been in close touch with the Ward 1 councillors, as well as President Albright on this challenging issue. And just a trigger warning here, don't worry, I'm not going to show any pictures, anything too graphic here. So don't worry about next time I flip the slides here. So I want to just give a quick update on where we are. You probably all received our update in writing earlier today. As many of you have probably seen over the last several years, there's been a lot of media attention about rats in the suburbs suddenly surging in the Boston suburbs. And this is happening North Shore, South Shore, Western suburbs, and all around. So Newton is not alone. Many other communities are seeing more attention to this issue. So this was an article in the Globe from 2018 that included a number of communities, including Newton. There have been a number of ongoing efforts by the city. Let me just start by saying that our Health and Human Services Department works with residents and business owners and our departments to understand rat behavior and to teach us all how to minimize their presence and impact on the community. They conduct site assessments and inspections. I think this year alone, it's over 140 assessments of properties based on rodent activity and what they see. And they've been quite successful in working with homeowners and businesses to complete remedial actions. The public buildings department, as well as the school departments, assess our own city buildings for pest issues and take steps when needed. And then also through the special permitting process, the city council, working with the planning department, works to require developers and owners of larger properties to have rodent remediation plans when it is called for. Many of you have probably seen the latest brochure from HHS and the history of rats. They've been here with us since the early 17th century and are certainly a known public health issue. Linda Walsh from HHS, our deputy director, is here, and she has a team of environmental health specialists who work on this issue together with our residents and businesses. We have a rodent tracking system in place for several years that's been very helpful in tracking issues and helping us target actions. Discouraging rats, you'll hear this over and over again, discouraging rats from living in our city will be most successful as a community effort. You all probably know the various things to look out for in terms of rats. I won't get into the details, but certainly in terms of maintaining your property, dealing with food sources, it's really in the end about food, water, and shelter. That's what rats need. And so removing and dealing with those issues, remediating those issues is incredibly important. We've made sure that our recycling and trash containers are rodent-proof. Certainly, if a device has been damaged, it should be replaced, and we will replace it or replace the lid if need be. So that is an important measure in terms of keeping those tightly covered during the week. I do want to now focus on new steps. These were announced in August in the mayor's update, and we are continuing to work very closely, very hard on these issues. Our inspectional services department began in a new policy of requiring rodent control inspections and services for every full property demolition permit, including by right projects that do not move through a special permit process. So as Councillor Greenberg requested, this really was our first start at looking at demolitions and making sure that those projects, even the by right projects, do not cause any localized impacts. Second, the Planning and Development Department is implementing a new policy to recommend to the council routinely and consistently on all special permits that involve excavation of significant, not just a small little area, but a significant excavation, that rodent control measures be provided as a condition and embedded into the construction management plan. This has historically only been done on larger projects. I will also say that we do hope that the council, when looking at a very large project, that it looks not just at the property, but also looks at some of the abutters and whether services might be needed to those abutting properties as well. It's more expensive for the developer, but in the end, for the very large projects, that is sometimes probably what is needed. And my understanding, that is sort of what TRIO did successfully in Newtonville. Third, the City of Newton will implement an environmentally sensitive rodent control program on city properties in areas experiencing issues. I will get to the details of that in a minute. Commissioner Morse is here with us to go into answer any questions on that. This is really a first. This has not been done by the city before. Fourth, the city will be contacting owners and contractors of currently active demolition construction sites that involve excavation to ask them to take rodent control measures and provide them information. We have a number of these projects that have now been asked and have complied with additional measures. Fifth, ISD is also providing rodent control advisory documents with the building permit process. Let me just get into a quick overview of what we're doing on public property. We looked at a number of options and decided to really try going with an IPM approach, integrated pest management approach, that did not involve out of the gate, did not involve poisons. Pretty much all pest control measures taken on private property and on public property across the country involve poison. And it's very rare that an entity tries an approach as different as this. We did see success in this rodent fertility control method called ContraPest, through a study that was done in Washington, D.C. As you might imagine, there are definitely rats in Washington, D.C. I can attest, I used to live there. This project is really pretty unique in that it relies upon essentially providing a sweetened liquid source that rats are attracted to that over time provides a significant fertility control method. Rats have, I don't even want to get into the details, you may not sleep tonight, but it is, they can produce many litters a year and large numbers of, I guess we'll call them pups in the litter. And it is, they can multiply incredibly quickly. Fertility control does have a relatively quick impact on a localized population of rats. And as you'll see in this image here, this study did find a 90% reduction in rat activity due to this activity. So what we did, Josh, working with our GIS maps and our HHS rodent complaint mapping system, we sort of put the two together and really tried to focus in on some city properties that are closest to the more significant activities. We have decided to then deploy this method at several locations in the Nonantum area, Forte Park, Pellegrini, Stearns, Boyd, Coletti Magni Park, and then also along the Upper Falls Greenway, on Homer Street, and on River Street Playground, which is up in West Newton. This is, to some degree, a pilot. We're going to see how this goes, but we have hopes that this is going to be a helpful process, and our contractor will be adjusting things and closely monitoring this so that if we need to move things around, we will, and we'll get a sense of success over time. I do wanted to show you on the left here is just an example of Stearns Park, where we put the bait locations, where here's a nice little bait station right here that was deployed yesterday, whereby the rats come on in, have a drink of their sweetened substance, and repeatedly, because they need a lot of liquids every single day, and then they will then hopefully fail to multiply. In addition to this method, I'm sure you're all going to have some questions on this. Josh is here to answer those. In addition to that, we have begun in areas where on city property, where we have identified burrow activity, burrow locations, we have our contractor is using carbon monoxide gas, which is a targeted method for extermination that is very successful. That does not have secondary impacts. Again, we are trying to prevent the secondary impacts that I think we all saw earlier this year with, I think it was the second bald eagle in Metro West, including along here in the Charles River, that died as a result of eating different animals that probably had rat poison in them. So we are trying to really go in a different direction. So in terms of these identified locations, hopefully we don't have too many of these, but identified locations with rat burrows on our property, we're going to take action. And it is immediately successful. Our contractor will go back to these sites and make sure that they're not reoccupied by our friends. Not friends. Just want to get into quickly next steps. We will be exploring financial assistance for programs and services for residents with lower resources. We feel that this is an important step. And then probably you're all interested, city councilors are interested in strengthening enforcement. And so the city will be collaborating with the council on analyzing additional ways to strengthen and expand actions allowed under state laws to better enforce rodent control actions. Linda Walsh is here along with Marie Lawler from the law department, who are part of our coordinating team that I lead with, in addition to John Lojack from ISD and Josh Morse. And we also have our environmental health inspectors, specialists, Moses and Bree, who are very skilled in this field, as well as occasional assistance from planning and parks, rec, and culture. So we will be looking at additional measures. Thank you to Councillor Greenberg in particular for sending along some other ordinances and bylaws from other communities, both here in Massachusetts and elsewhere, as possibilities. So I will let Linda and Marie answer any questions on that. So that is just a summary of where we are, and we look forward to working with the council on this over the next several months. We think we're off to a good start in terms of taking action, And these are measures that have never really been done by the city ever before. And we feel that these are appropriate steps given where we are. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yeo. If that concludes the presentation, let me quickly welcome is it Deputy Director, Ms. Walsh, and Councillor John Oliver, who have joined us. Hands raised. First hand I see is Councillor Humphrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I got a text message from a resident during this who asked if we needed to hire the Pied Piper of Hamlin, and I said that was a good cost-effective solution because I've heard we don't have to pay him afterward. So I was hoping that this presentation could be made available separately from, you know, like just as a document, not part of any agenda or anything like that, so that we can send this out to any constituents that are asking about it, because I thought this was a fantastic presentation that really addressed all kinds of different questions and angles. So that would certainly be a good thing to make available.
Absolutely. I'll get it to Danielle.
I definitely appreciated seeing that the Greenway area is going to be one of the pilot areas, and obviously you folks on the city side have been in regular communication with the Ward 5 councilors, the Upper Falls Area Council, the liaison committee folks who will be working with the Northland team. And the Northland team, they have also been very good about being extremely responsive to anything that's been raised. I think it's interesting that you point out about that this has been kind of a growing issue and concern, not just in Newton, but all over the area. There seems to be something big going on. You know, it's hard to say exactly what that is. And as Councillor Greenberg said at the beginning, it's, if nothing else, it's a multifaceted cause that's leading to this outcome. Because I think we've definitely had a lot of residents saying, you know, well, is this just because of these recent big developments? And I think there's obviously some element of that that's correct. But it also seems like some of the smaller projects can create these sort of challenges as well. And then there are other things that have nothing to do with development that are also related. So, you know, it's a complicated set of causes, and it's probably going to take a complicated set of solutions to really tamp down on this. And I think this is a really kind of exciting pilot program to try, and I really hope that it works, because as you said, we really don't want to be you know, spreading poisons up the food chain. And unfortunately, some, as you said, some private owners have undertaken that independently, and that has led to some pretty bad secondary impacts. I also appreciated the idea of providing some financial assistance in this to some people that might not be able to do some of these things on their own. I think that's an excellent idea that was very forward thinking to make sure we can really work on this. So I'm, you know, looking forward to taking another look through this presentation and hopefully distributing that to residents. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Humphrey. Thank you, Mr. Yeo, for making that available to us. Appreciate that. Councilor Baker.
Thank you, and I appreciate the presentation as well. Two things that occur to me, Mr. Yeo. The idea of having rodent control like this that is not itself have secondary impacts, I think is a really important key feature of it. And frankly, I had not heard of either of these solutions before. I know Australia has been overrun badly. I've been reading, I don't know about other places, but the reproductive issue is a powerful one. I guess the question is the cost of these things and whether as part of the process, not just of demolition, but there seems to me there's a positive educational opportunity for all the building contractors in the city when they come in to pull a building permit, just to say, hey, this is something we're spending our money on because we think it works and you ought to know about it. The question is, how expensive is it? And if private owners want to use this, how they do it. And the flip side is to start thinking about whether, in fact, we ought to discourage the use of poisons for precisely the same reason, that the secondary impacts. I know that putting them in your basement and things like that is something that I assume many of us have done in the past because we thought it was a limited impact. But if there's a secondary impact that we don't know about, I think a lot of citizens would like to know that, especially if there's a viable alternative. So there's seems to me there's a very high public information opportunity here where some pathfinding work by the city can really pay dividends beyond and above the limited circumstances that you described is as major as they are. So
thank you. Those are great points. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Councillor Baker. Are you all set?
Yep, I'm done.
Okay. Next, I have Councillor Wright, followed by Councillor Oliver. Councillor Wright?
Thank you. I have a bunch of questions. Thank you for the presentation. I just want to point out, you mentioned that TRIO was successful. I wouldn't necessarily say successful, but I would say that they were better than Sunrise because I've gotten a lot of emails about rats there, but nothing compared to what Sunrise is.
We'll take that. We'll take that as, better.
Yes. So you talk about rodent control measures, and I'm hoping that we would have very specific things like this is what we'd like to see as a sample. You know, this is a rodent control measure. Do A, B, C, D, E instead of letting it up. The contractors decide. I mean, they can decide at the end, but this way will be very clear. This is what we're expecting of them to do when they pull a permit. And I, along with Councillor Baker, it shouldn't be just for teardowns. Something should be for additions because they're digging in, especially they're doing a basement, whatever, could be quite significant. And they're moving the ground. So just demos.
Those are two good points. I think our decision, at least out of the gate, was to start with whole building demolitions and sort of larger excavations. So, you know, there's a lot of people who are demolishing something very, very small, or a very small addition. And although I did just hear that somebody was demolishing a garage and which had some known issues. And when they came into ISD, ISDs told them, you got to do some rodent control. So I think they're on it. I think where we know of fear of any kind of excavation, we're going to ask. Now, regarding what measures to be taken, I'm not an expert in this, but I do not think we as a municipality have the ability to then dictate what these rodent control specialists, the contractors, can do. I don't think that cities and towns, Marie can jump in here at some point, but I think it's really up to state and federal laws in terms of, I mean, they go through their own certification processes. And, I definitely, as Councillor Baker suggested, we could try to help educate them and point them in a good direction, especially if our fertility control program works. I think, though, if I were a neighbor and there was a large demolition next to me, the fertility thing, I suppose if there was a year delay on a teardown or something, but I think they're going to want something more immediate. Certainly the carbon monoxide, if you have known burrows, the carbon monoxide method, Josh, I think we found that it's a relatively inexpensive measure to be taken. And it seems that should be done where you have known burrows.
But what I was kind of mentioning is not so much dictating, but giving them a sample. This is a sample rodent, measures. So they have a good idea versus, because there's so many different contractors coming in and not everyone will be familiar. And then another thing you brought up is significant volume of soil. What is considered or the definition of significant?
We toss that around internally. I think for now, we stuck with the whole building demolitions. I think there's 125 of those a year. Not including all of, your special permits. You all are going to decide that with the planning department's input in terms of what you require on those. Because some of your special permits are dormers that don't involve any excavation, and then some have significant excavation. So we're starting with whole building demolitions. If we know of a significant excavation on a project, I think ISD is going to ask, is going to check the box in terms of needing rodent control. And I think also where we have known problems, If HHS has a known problem on an area that's about to be excavated, they should be required then too. So we're going to take it a couple steps at a time here and see how successful we are. This is the first time the city has tried something like this. It's a relatively large undertaking.
Is the rodent map that you showed, is that up on the city website?
It is not. Well, it will be once this is published, but it is. Well, parts of it are, because when you look at the rodent sighting map on our website, you see pieces of this, I believe, Linda. At times, you see pieces of these sightings. So
I have to say, I did report rodents in Newton, and I've seen them in Waltham, and they're much, much bigger. We have smaller ones. One contest we don't want to win.
I think we had a few in Milwaukee too, Pam.
Yes. I actually seen the sewer rats, literally. The pilot program that you're doing, has it been successful other places? We're not the first ones.
Yeah, Josh, why don't you explain sort of how we got to where we are?
Sure. So when we started down this road, as Jonathan elaborated to or alluded to, what we wanted to make sure we were doing was effectively addressing the situation while also not having secondary kill or secondary impacts. ContraPest is a fertility treatment that allows us to pretty quickly break the reproductive cycle, which from an exponential growth curve, when you look at rat populations, that can have a pretty profound impact. And the material that was provided, I would encourage everybody, when we get this presentation out there, there's a little click here, and it's got a case study for Washington, D.C. It's got a lot of really good facts in there, and it really showcases what this product can do. As Jonathan said, it's not something you put down and magically all the rats are gone. So if you have an active burrow situation, you do want to take other means. I will put this out there because I'll feel better going to bed tonight if I do, and the fire chief will feel good for me saying this. If you're a resident out there, if you are not a licensed pest control expert, do not try to use carbon monoxide to kill rats yourself. Make sure you are securing the professional services necessary to do that. That's really the theory behind ContraPest. We will have a pretty good, you'll see in the materials from DC, I think we're going to understand pretty quickly the success of the program. It does take a little bit of time. The other thing I would say, just to folks who are looking at the list, if you see that your neighborhood isn't on there and you have reported issues, this is a fluid list. We are going to use this. We're monitoring these stations with our pest control company. When we start to see consumption decline and rat reporting decline, we will move to other locations throughout the city to slowly bring that entire curve down. So.
Okay. You said quickly break the cycle. I don't know what the rat cycle is. Is it like a month, a week?
So rats, a couple very quick points. Rats live about 1 to 2 years in the wild. They have, they breed and have pups about 6 times a year, and they have 5 to 10 to as many as 15 pups, at a time.
Okay. And then could we do something on Northland right now? Because I'm getting emails about the rats down there, which they're doing the demo.
I was there yesterday.
Okay.
They're not doing the demo right now.
Oh, I think some buildings came down, didn't they?
That was a while ago.
Yeah. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Oliver, followed by President Albright. Councillor Oliver.
Thank you, Councillor Crinsman. And I'm going to go quickly because I think there have been a few of my questions that have been kind of tackled already. But I do think this is a fantastic start. I really appreciate the work being done here. It's been great so far partnering with not only Councillors Leary, Albright, and Greenberg to get to where we are now, but I'm really excited that the city's kind of taking this up. I do have a few questions, but I'm going to start by saying, did I miss a lot of this conversation, or I don't want to make anyone repeat anything because I did come in a little bit late. Did we get a quick summary? And if not, could we just where are the legal implications? Because I see it in the written document, and I've heard Jonathan mention this a couple of times. Are there some like simple guidelines that perhaps Marie could kind of step us through really quickly? Like what can Newton do? What can't Newton do? Might be a good way to good starting point.
Yeah, she and Linda can start with the state sanitary code. I think is probably a good place to start. And the two of them can just sort of explain how that works and what our team does in relationship to that and what we can and cannot do. So thank you.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Linda, do you want me to start? What there are several ways that the city can now kind of deal with these issues when they come up. For example, the health department, and Linda will be able to speak to this in more detail, has several, depending on the entity in which the problem lies. If it's a restaurant solely that's causing, that's attracting vermin, or if it's another type of property. There is the public nuisance portion of the health statute, which is chapter 111, and I think the section is section 122 and 123, if I'm not mistaken. And that allows the commissioner of public health to issue an abatement order for a public nuisance if once the commissioner determines that a condition is injurious to public health or attracts disease. And so there can be an order of abatement that goes forth on those, and the offending entity is given a period of time, whatever the department thinks is reasonable, from 24 hours to whatever longer period is reasonable to correct the nuisance. Under the state law, if it is not corrected, and it looks like it's not corrected, going to be corrected, the department could bring the offender into court. The state law provides for a fine, a penalty of $1,000 per day that the public nuisance continues beyond the date the order said it must be corrected. So that is one line of defense or offense, depending on how you look at it. Which is, I think going to prove effective. If it is and that is effective for pretty much any type of property, any private property that has something like an open dumpster that's attracting rats or vermin or anything else. If it's specifically a restaurant and it is limited to a restaurant or other food type of facility, the state, there is a state sanitary code that deals specifically with that. And there would be different procedures, probably similar, but different procedures specified under that state code for restaurants or food concessions, and the state sanitary code as well. In terms of what the Commissioner of Inspectional Services is proposing, and I thought he would be here tonight, but I don't see that he is. But in any event, when there is a policy in place for requiring a particular type of project which needs to pull building permit, if that policy requires a pest, I think they're called integrated pest control management plans, and these are conducted by licensed certified professionals, there would be a requirement that projects get one of these professionals to prepare a plan. If that is not done, if that's not complied with, the commissioner would have an extremely effective method for getting compliance, and that is to issue a stop work order. If a stop work order is slapped a building code on a developer, that developer can no longer build until he, until the developer comes into compliance with whatever is he's not doing with the pest integrated, the integrated pest management control plan. And if someone works past or in spite of a stop work order prior to resolving the issue with ISD, then that under the state building code carries a $1,000 per day fine attached to it. So those, but the worst of it is, as you know, a developer, time is money. If the developer can't work on the project, that is going to get the developer's attention. So I think those are two very effective ways to at least to attempt to mitigate the problem with property owners or developers who are not cooperative. I think the great majority, once educated, will probably be very cooperative. And I think that is the goal is compliance, not to take people into court. But in any event, those are our tools currently. There are a number of cities and towns that have ordinances that require just what the policy is going to do, that require certain projects, building projects requiring a building permit, that you know, and there are varying trigger points. And this council, if you do determine that you want an ordinance, would have to determine what are those trigger points. You may not want to require a pest control management plan, which is expensive for a very small homeowner that's doing a very tiny addition, and up to the scale of a very large project, which maybe by right we can deal with special permit projects differently. But the one thing, and that it's good to have the ordinance. One thing to remember that with an ordinance, your maximum penalty, and it's a criminal misdemeanor, your maximum penalty is $300 per day that a violation continues. So that is, depending, developer may not feel that that is sufficient deterrence. In any event, those are the things you can be thinking about. When you're talking about projects that require a special permit, and these are usually your larger projects, you have a great deal more leeway in fashioning your conditions, because the city council can, as you know, can institute many conditions on the grant of a special permit. And one of those conditions can certainly be, and I think have been in the past, we've seen some more recently that require pest control management plans and others. So that is something that is also very effective. And I think as Jonathan said earlier, the planning department is working on recommendations for what the special conditions pertaining to rodents and other pests should look like and when they would be triggered. So I think we will see that in the near future. A violation of a special permit condition is also a zoning violation. So that in itself would be, if you did need to enforce that in terms of a zoning violation, that again is a $300 per day limit if you brought the developer or whoever into court. But I think your special permit conditions are very effective for large projects. I hope that answers your questions if there's anything further.
Absolutely. No, I think that's fantastic. That's the great summary. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
One of the things that we heard recently in a conversation with, and I never knew such a profession existed, but a professional consultant for rodent management, one of the topics that he brought up was the importance of, in terms of measuring the impact or the efficacy of a rodent, of an IPM, right, against rodents, rats in particular, one of the items that he brought up was the importance of monitoring before, during, and after a particular event like a construction project or a construction project of a lot of different types. And I'm curious, know, either maybe Josh or Mr. Yeo, is that something that you guys have considered as part of this in terms of how you're approaching? Because I see you've got the right words in here. You've got the, you know, environmentally sensitive and areas experiencing issues. And I think Councillor Wright asked a good question about how do we go from, you know, experiencing issues as a statement to experiencing issues of X or Y or increase, you know, how are we going to, you know, I think we need to, I don't need to know right now, but I think it's important for us to kind of keep at the forefront of our thinking that we've got to get quantitative or objective to a lot of these measures in order for this to really be successful for our existing neighbors and neighborhoods.
That's a great question, Counselor. I'll let Linda maybe explain what they do with it, like a residential, typical residential situation. I know that Commissioner Lojack and I were discussing this, a need for, especially on demolition projects, to have an inspection first. Because, you know, in the end, it's, as I said at the beginning, it's really about food, water, and shelter. The only reason that we're talking about demolitions and construction is that we're disturbing them. It's not creating anything. It's just you're disturbing them, and then they're going to some neighbors' houses. Certainly, if they're there, they may be getting food from, you know, a garden down the street or a dumpster in the other direction. I mean, they need food, they need water. So we would like to be able to get an inspection done beforehand because that may inform what is actually needed. So you might need something bigger like this carbon monoxide treatment if you have known issues before you start tearing down a building. I mean, that right. would. I mean, even if you just put in some poison rodenticide and you demolished a building that had burrows underneath it, that would not be a good situation. So, Linda, I don't know, in terms of like a residential situation, you know, you've heard a complaint, your team goes out there, they do an assessment, and then what happens?
Right. Hello. Councilor Alawa, thank you. Well, I would add one thing to Marie. Marie gave a great answer. And I would just say one of the first things that's important for us, right, is we need to be invited onto somebody's property. And that right away can be tricky. Both Moses and Bree and our other two inspectors, Paul and Kyle, they've done a lot of these assessments. They're very good at talking to people. But in the end of the day, if they don't answer their buzzer and they don't let you in their backyard, that can be tough. We can, however, do a plain view inspection. So if we can see their yard, if we can see burrows along the perimeter of their yard, we'll still go forward and we'll still send our letters and we will still try to contact them. It's interesting because I've had this job a really long time. Most people do comply. They don't answer our letter, but they must read it because then we go back out and we see that a lot of times people take care of their trouble spots. And it's a tough conversation to have when you're asking them to take their bird feeder down, when you're telling them that once their apples fall into the ground, they really have to pick them up. We're not really welcome participants in those conversations. They're 100-year-old great vines. But we do, through either talking to them verbally or writing them a letter, find a lot of compliance. If we don't find compliance, either with our restaurants, which we have almost 100% compliance. When your food inspector tells you that you have to correct something in your restaurant, that we don't have a lot of problems with them. But if it's a house or a homeowner, somebody that isn't allowing us onto their property and it's a problem, that's when I call Marie or anybody in our law department. They'll help us strengthen our letter, send it certified mail, assess some fines. We don't have to do it that often, frankly, but we always have that option. Your question and the fact that, yes, there is a rodentologist was fascinating to me, too. But Bree Gray is actually on a team of inspectors in the Northeast. Bree knew about the Washington, D.C. program of contra pest, and Bobby Corrigan, who's this rodentologist, sits right on that committee. And their goal is to really look at municipal rodent programs and try to be thinking creatively and try to do the best that we can to get people to comply. So it's a hard question how you get hard data, though. That was your initial question. You know, how do you know that this is effective? How many have you seen this year, this month? And we have some longitudinal data. I can tell you it just goes up and up and up. And it's dependent on somebody calling us going out and verifying. Because somebody calls us, they saw a rat walking down the street, but we cannot verify where that rat came from by the time we go out and look at it. Right now, our numbers are increasing every single year. We have numbers from 2018. We'd love to see them go down, and maybe we'll attribute it to contra pest. That would be great. Josh, did you tell me that the contractor that we were using was going to do some kind of tracking, video cameras, some kind of activity before, during, and after, or did I just make that up?
No, so I'm glad you asked. There's a couple things. I would just share, Councillor Oliver, and we've been working together on this side with Jonathan and Linda and ISD and law, as Jonathan mentioned. What we found pretty successful in our school and municipal building projects is we do our pre-existing walkthrough of the entire site, do visual inspections. Obviously, if there are any known issues, which is pretty rare on our sites because we don't tend to have a lot of food source, then we would address it. We then have our IPM plan that continues throughout the duration of the project, including surrounding property. And then we have a post-inspection. The thing that I think is important for people to remember is you could have no rat activity at a site, but if you're disturbing a site, you're potentially creating new homes. So you may not have a food and water issue, but if you create a nice little home, like a slope surface next to a parking lot, you might be opening up a hotel. So, you know, you got to make sure you're doing the inspection before, during, and after. As far as how do you measure, there are some ways that you can do that. For example, even with the contra pest solution, the contra pest solution is a liquid. They go there to drink. Rats need to drink quite a bit, but they consume an awful lot. They eat constantly. What you can do is you can actually put within the contra pest bait stations, you can put cubes of non-rodenticide food product that will give you a visual observation as that will let you know not only with the decrease in levels of the contra pest solution, but it'll give you a sense as to a visual observation of rat activity. It's hard to give you a quantitative. As Linda was mentioning, there are some very expensive solutions out there where you can actually have bait stations with cameras. I believe Dow Chemical makes those now, and you can get remote alerts and quantity data. Super, super expensive, but they're very, very accurate, obviously. But those bait stations work really well. You know, I think really what you're trying to figure out is, are you winning or losing? You're not trying to figure out, in my mind, whether it's 78 or 74 or 3 or 1. You're trying to figure out if 80 went down to 3.
Right. Exactly. And it sounds like there's been some robust conversation about that. And that's what I'm really interested in right now, is making sure that that's how we're thinking about this. And then the last comment that I have, not a question, is I would really like to see how the city can make those, I'll call them the rat maps, more accessible. Certainly, I don't want to see them on the homepage of the website, but maybe there's a way we can send traffic, people to see what those maps are looking like. I've had a lot of people in affected neighborhoods right now asking, you know, are shocked to hear that there are maps that are available. So if we could figure out how to kind of expose those a little bit, either through, you know, make it a landing page or something, or just give us a URL that we can use with interested residents, that would be fantastic.
All right, we'll talk about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Thank you, Councillor Crinsman. I'm all set.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Oliver. Let me just add that if the map is all the reports, it's just going to grow over time. But if we're able to show you know, monthly or something like that, we might even be able to actually demonstrate potentially, you know, waning incidences of calls.
Yeah, the police actually have a pretty good one now on their website that shows like a residential house breaks, and you can set it by 6 months or last 2 weeks, or, you know, you can sort of get a sense. Yeah.
It's more interactive in that sense. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I see President Albright, followed. Oh, Councilor Wright, did you have something specifically on this topic? Is that what you're?
Yeah, specifically. For? Yes. Oops, sorry. Most people don't know that they're supposed to report a rat sighting to the city. So I think it's going to be a while before you actually see good data if things are going up or down, because I think what's going to happen is more people will learn about it, so you're going to get more rats because they're reporting.
Agreed.
Yeah. President Albright.
Let's try to unmute before I start talking. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank you, Mr. Yeo, Mr. Morse, Ms. Waller, Ms. Walsh, I mean, all of you who picked up the ball and ran with it. And I want to thank my colleagues from Ward 1, and particularly Maria Greenberg, who did a tremendous amount of research when this really struck our two wards pretty much at the same time because of what was going on there. And, Ms. Councilor Greenberg found a tremendous amount of building permit applications, I guess they were, from other cities and towns, where it had a section from the health department, I guess, typically, that they required before you get your building permit, you have to sign off that you had done the inspection and so forth. So what I'm asking for at some point is to see written evidence, I guess, that all of this is really being seen by developers and homeowners who are wanting to get a building permit. So we'd love to see the finished product of all of this policy work.
Yeah, I meant to show the checklist, the new building checklist, because this was added into the one-page checklist, which is the key document when you come in. There's boxes that have to be filled and then approved. So I will get that out.
Okay, that would be great.
I can attest, as somebody who pulls a lot of permits, that is in action.
Okay, that's good. That's very good news. What about restaurants when they get their licenses and so forth? Is there a similar checklist that has rat information on there, you know, about dumpsters and so forth and sanitary issues with respect to restaurants?
Linda?
It is covered in the state sanitary code and on our permit application.
Okay, good. What if a restaurant or a developer or someone that has a rat problem wanted to partner with the city on your pilot and to use your system as opposed to rodenticides? Would that be a possibility?
Do you want me to take that one? All right. No is a short answer, but that does not mean that we just turn a blind eye and a cold shoulder to them. So as a city, we're not supposed to make recommendations to contractors. That's a slippery slope. There's also a whole separation of public and private funding that becomes complicated. But I do think Councilor Baker raised it. This would be, I look at it like electrification. We are showing how it can be done and how it can be done effectively, cost effectively and easily. We are leading by example. And I think that by showing that to people and making those resources, I think we can certainly make the resource about ContraPest available to the general public and to our residents. And certainly we can put out IPM fact sheets. There's a lot of good data there. But I think when we can show that it is successful on the city initiative, it will be a great way to open people's eyes to the fact that it is a viable option for them. And the other thing I would say is that it is marginally more expensive, but it's really not that bad, especially when you're talking about small scale. And honestly, if you're talking large scale developers can probably afford. I'll leave that in all of your capable hands, but Those are negotiated through special permits. You have a lot more latitude, as Marie Lawler alluded to. That's small peanuts in the grand scheme of things. So.
Yeah, I think when the special permit condition gets written that goes into all of the special permit board or council orders, we should think about whether we want to have a condition that specifies that they don't use rat poisons. That if we find that we're successful in this process, we might want to think about requiring that they not use poison. So something maybe, Ms. Waller, that you could take back and think about whether it, I think there's a lot of people who would be happier if we didn't have poisons all over the city, mm-hmm. poisoning small animals that poison birds and so forth. So if we're successful, I'd love to go in that direction.
And I think you certainly can think about that in terms of putting that as a condition in a special permit.
Good.
Of course, you know, subject to the developer, the way you negotiate any special permit conditions. But I think you certainly can put that in a special permit.
Good. We should think about doing that.
And I should add that ContraPest was patented only a few short years ago. So I don't want folks thinking that this is, you know, everybody is just ignoring an awesome opportunity there. It was patented. Not everybody wants to be the very first community to use it, but now it's been pretty successful at a number of locations. So
that's great. So
if I may, I don't know that you could require a particular company, but you can require that there are non-poison methods attempted where possible.
Yep. And my final comment is that the area where they were using carbon monoxide mm-hmm. was covered with poison ivy. I can see it.
Oh, yeah.
Right away. So
Josh, that's what I asked Josh. I asked Josh, did he come out scratching, because it didn't look good there.
No, it did not look good.
The key is a cold shower with soap and a face cloth, and scrub it off. Like, pretend that you're covered in the axle grease. That's the way you do it.
Okay. I'll have to remember that the next time that happens to me. Thanks very much to all of you for all your hard work on this.
Thank you, President Albright. We'll see if maybe we're going to end this discussion where we started. Councilor Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to thank the administration for all their hard work. I'm very excited about all the initiatives. I think the residents will be very excited to hear all these. I just had a couple of questions about the policy that's going through ISD about the requirement. Will we see that language, and will we be able to review it?
Yes, I'll be sending that checklist, and then John, Commissioner Lojack, will be working with Marie in sort of formalizing that, and then beginning to work with you all on the council in terms of, I would think, next step would be to sort of formalize that into an ordinance.
Oh, that's great, because in my research, each town had very different ways of handling it. Some towns required surveys done 2 weeks prior to demolition, mitigation done 14 days prior, and then 2 weeks afterwards. So there are a lot of details in each of the different ordinances. So I think we could pick through and pick the best ones that would best fit us mm-hmm. and would have the most effect.
In the meantime, I believe, you know, Commissioner Lojack strongly believes that he has the power to require it. I think even our law department agrees that, at least in the meantime, he has that ability to change his checklist and require certain things and enforce the state building code as he sees fit. Yeah. So that is what he's doing.
Okay. It's just that if it's a checklist and it just says you need to have a pest mitigation plan in place, is it detailed? Does it say how many days, the radius of the boxes?
That's a good question. I think to some degree you need to let the professional make some of those decisions in the field in terms of, you know, a professional you know, rodent control person make those decisions. So I don't know, you know, it's always a challenge. How explicit do you want to be, and how much determination do you want to make? So I think those are the things we all need to work on together.
Okay.
And yeah. We'll get John and some of his team members in here. So.
Okay. So Chair Christman, perhaps I'd like to put this on hold for further discussion.
Sure. So what I'm thinking, Councillor Greenberg, I'm thinking that the first item, the request for a discussion, that we mm-hmm. could probably NAN, and then the second one, the request for additional control initiatives, we could hold and maybe use that maybe to get an update from Mr. Yeo or others about how these things are going. Does that make sense to folks on the line?
So could...
President Albright?
The first one asked for a discussion and a possible creation of an ordinance.
Right.
So I'm wondering, the term is not forever, it's a couple of months, but in case that the administration feels that we need to create an ordinance to help with the enforcement, I think we should leave that one and perhaps get rid of the other one.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I agree with that too, because if you do want to make an ordinance, you still want that to be a docketed item.
Okay, so it sounds like everyone agrees. Position how you want. I think my proposal is exactly correct, but we'll do the exact opposite. Okay, so someone want to make a motion to NAN 341-21, the request for additional rodent control initiatives. Do I hear a request for a motion to NAN?
I'll move that we NAN it.
Okay, President Albright has moved NAN. Any discussion? All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, I believe that is 7-0 looking around the room. And I believe Councillor Greenberg has moved hold on 267-21, which is a request for a discussion on rodent control in Newton. Correct, Councillor Greenberg?
Correct.
Okay. Councillor Greenberg has moved hold. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so that is also 7-0 to hold. That concludes the RAT portion of the evening. Thank you. Thank you all for your participation. A very, very robust discussion and certainly a lot of information. Thank you. This brings us to the next item, which is item 308-21. This is the request for a discussion on the COVID-19 vaccination mandate. I think Councillor Gentile is going to join us and talk about this item. Nathan, can you see if you can get a hold of Councillor Gentile? In the meantime, maybe we can just, as a committee, move on to, there were a couple of items at the end of the agenda which seemed appropriate for an NAN so that we could dispose of these. Let me introduce those and we'll see if anyone wants to make a motion to NAN those.
I can throw up a moment, Mr. Chair, just to let you know, sure. I did just text Councillor Gentile. I did email the co-docketers to let them know we are moving on to this item.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to these last items. We'll see if he shows up. If not, I'll introduce it. So item 99-21, this is a discussion regarding the resources needed for a safe return to in-person learning. I think the students are learning in person this year. We have returned, I believe, safely. I am happy to move NAN. Any discussion? All right, all those in favor of NAN?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, take that as 7-0. Item 156-20, this is a request for comparison of dog license fines. Actually, let me introduce both these last two. Request for a comparison of dog license fines. And item 157-20, this was a request for review and changes to off-leash dog ordinance. President Albright, these were your items. If folks on the committee recall, we did a bunch of work on the dogs earlier in the session. And then at some point, I think we concluded that there was the off-leash task force that should take up some of these discussion items that we had. And we thought maybe the council could hold off at least until next term to take these up. Do I have that right, President Albright?
Exactly right. So the idea would be to NAN them now and then redocket them if they need to be redocketed.
Okay. President Albright has moved to NAN. Any discussion? All right. All those in... Councillor Humphrey, was that for discussion or were you?
Yeah, I was just going to I just don't want us to forget that there was that component that we've been now talking about for 2 years about potentially change, or changing how the registration and licensing process and renewals process is done, which, you know, we had talked about before the summer. And then I think things kind of got, you know, there's been a lot on our plate, obviously, but I just want us to keep that still in mind.
So could I make a suggestion for Councillor Humphrey? We have a new clerk coming in.
Yeah.
Next month. And I think you should raise that issue, because if it's just a procedural issue, that's something that, you know, that you could propose to the clerk and see if you can make some progress that way.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So President Albright has moved to NAN. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, that is 7-0. NAN knows. Thank you. That brings us back to our last item. This is 308-21. This is a request for a discussion on a COVID-19 vaccination mandate. I know that Mr. Yeo has mentioned, I don't want to steal your thunder, I'm happy to turn it over to you, unless you don't want to make a statement at all, but I believe the city is taking the position that this is a subject of collective bargaining, potentially active collective bargaining that is happening currently with unions across the city. As such, I think the city is not interested or unable to discuss this tonight. If I've misstated,
I have a very quick statement. That's all.
Okay. Can I just ask, did the teachers in the schools, has there been an agreement on vaccination for teachers across the schools?
Yes.
And they've agreed to that? Mm-hmm. That's in place?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. You want to make your statement, Mr. Yeo?
Yeah, I think the mayor's talked about this in multiple mayor's updates over the last month, but our team at City Hall has developed a plan for having our municipal employees fully vaccinated to protect the health of everyone who works for the city, as well as the public whom we serve. This involves bargaining with our unions, and these discussions are very actively underway. And as you all know, our mayor is very serious about actions she proposes, and this is under discussion right now, and we do hope to get to this fully vaccinated state. And as I believe the chair has mentioned, it is subject to bargaining. It's a term potential. A mandate is a potential term of employment, and it is something that we do have to bargain at least initially.
Thank you, Mr. Yeo. Councillor Humphrey.
Are we able to ask which
you can ask anything you want.
Yeah. which bargaining units have been resolved and which are still ongoing?
Oh, I'm not even directly involved in it, so it makes it easy. I can't really even answer that question, so makes it easy for me.
All right.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say the school nurses might be on board, though. So,
was the discussion with the NTA, was that collectively bargained?
Yeah, there. My understanding, and I was chair of the negotiating committee for the school committee years ago. But my understanding is that there were discussions and there was an agreement, and something was signed. So.
Okay. Okay, I am not seeing any other hands at the moment. I think this one is probably best to hold, since it sounds like these discussions are ongoing and we may be able to get additional, better, more information at a later date.
We will update you as soon as we possibly can.
Okay. Oh, looks like we are being joined. So before I close this up, it looks like Councillor Norton has joined us. Councillor Norton, we're just about to hold the COVID-19 vaccination mandate item because what we've heard is that it's the subject of collective bargaining and we can't discuss it too much here. Won't get our questions answered. We're sort of at the end of our discussion here, and I think we're going to take a motion to hold. Does anyone want to make a motion to hold or any other motion. I don't mean to dictate, but it seems like hold is appropriate here.
Yeah, I'll move hold.
President Albright has moved hold. Any discussion on that motion? Okay, all those in favor of hold?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, that is 7-0. We will hold that item. Again, Mr. Yeo, thank you. Certainly appreciate, you know, an update when you have one. You can let me know. I can put it on an agenda if that's appropriate, or maybe we'll just see on in a mayor's update. And I think that brings us to the end of our business for the night. Nathan, am I right? Did we hit it all?
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, if I could just briefly interrupt, Mr. Chair, I think you were clear, but I just wanted to make sure there was no doubt. For items 156.20 and 157.20, you took an NAN vote on the two of those together?
The two dog items, yes.
Yes.
Yes, we did.
Okay. And each of them was 7-0.
Each of them was 7-0. Correct.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. 9:01. We got a lot done tonight. Thank you all very much. Quite a meeting. Thank you, everyone. See you next time.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Have a good night.